Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 67 of Season 7 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is DJ Valentine of Simplistic Review. Welcome back to the show, DJ.
A pleasure, as always, talking about the last Die Hard film. Yes, the last. Die Hard movie ever made. It's a shame. It's a shame. No, just let it live. Let's let it live in a bubble.
It's going to be very interesting to have you talk about the other two.
What? I don't know.
Even though they're not part of the whole thing. So we'll have to wait and see.
They say Brad Pitt has face blindness. I have Die Hard with a Vengeance blindness. I don't know what you're talking about. I've never seen it. Never heard of it.
I've actually never heard that he's had face blindness. I don't know exactly what that really means.
He said he has face blindness. He can't recognize faces. It sounds like, as the kids say, cap to me. So I'm going to take his word for it, but tongue in cheek. He can't recognize faces. I don't recognize movies that don't have a Gruber in it. So yeah, there we go.
Wait, but you were on Die Hard too. There was no Gruber there. They mentioned
the Nakatomi connection. We know what Nakatomi and Gruber go hand in hand. There's no Nakatomi connections going on in the other two. I would assume. I don't remember. I refuse. I don't
think so. Okay, fair enough. All right, so minute 67 begins with Rolf getting concerned and ends...
His name is Rolf.
and ends with Rolf understanding the situation. Yes, his name is Rolf.
Okay. He's a Muppet. He's a dog. He plays the piano.
That's right.
That's the only Rolf I know.
Well, now you know another one. There's two. So yesterday we ended things with John telling Zeus to take the Samsonite bomb and take it over to those three cops standing over there. You know. So... You know, we see in the distance three cops standing by an unmarked police car, and then the shot changes and we're close by and we see one of the guys talking on a walkie-talkie, which for some reason in Die Hard movies everyone has all these walkie-talkies. You know, it's like if you're making a Die Hard film, you have to have the villains dealing with walkie-talkies with number codes in them and stuff like that.
Yep.
So the actor who plays this character, the character's name is Rolf. We only find that out from the from the credits. He's never referred to as the name Rolf. Okay. The actor's name is Rob Sedgwick.
Okay.
Does
any relation to Kira Sedgwick?
He is her younger brother.
Are you joking? I was just pulling that. Holy crap. That's awesome.
That's right. He has 32 IMDb credits. Okay. He is the younger brother of Kara Sedgwick. That's right. And basically that means that
he's the brother-in-law of Kevin Bacon.
That is right. Brother-in-law of Kevin Bacon, which means that everyone in this movie is one step closer to Kevin Bacon.
Oh, that's fantastic news. That's fantastic news. Should have never told me that. Holy crap, we got baconitis. We're in the bacons. We're doing bacon, baby. Oh, Kevin Bacon would have made a great Die Hard villain, by the way. He would have been pretty good. Now my brain is stinking. They should make a Die Hard 4 with Kevin Bacon.
I for some reason think that it will not be number 4.
No. Like, there's only three. Let's make a fourth one. What are you doing?
And we also know that unfortunately, Bruce Willis isn't making any more Die Hard movies.
That's true.
The trilogy was enough, and that was it. You know.
Yep, that was it.
We closed the book on that. But I do like the fact that you have this actor who has a few little lines throughout the whole movie, but it turns out it's Kevin Bacon's brother-in-law. So.
Wow.
Yes. All right. So Rolf starts talking into his walkie-talkie, and he goes, "He's here." And then the shot changes.
You gotta be more specific.
That's right. Be more specific. It changes, and we actually see, first of all, we see Zeus starting to approach him.
Yeah.
And then the shot changes, and we see Simon, who's on one of the dump trucks or in one of the dump trucks, and we see that Katya and Targo are next to him, and he goes, Perhaps you could be a little more specific.
He's so polite.
Like, who the hell are you talking about? And we see, like, Zeus struggling with the bike. So, I mean, yesterday we talked about the fact that, you know, Samuel L. Jackson handles the bike really well. But I guess he got tired out, you know, after a day of having to
long,
do it.
It's a long ride he had on. He's a little tired, a little pooped.
That's right. And then Rolf continues and says, McLean is here. He's walking towards the bank. And the black man is coming towards me.
The black man is coming toward me. It's not the first time that's been said.
That's right. And Simon goes, oh, that's a pity. And after we've gone to all that trouble at the stadium.
I love how he said, oh, that's a pity.
That's right. And we see, we can already see from this, first of all, Simon is sitting very comfortably, you know, in this dump truck. You can see that his leg is up. You know, he's resting his arm on his knee, you know, sitting very comfortably here. And Katya, who doesn't say anything, is just staring straight ahead, not doing much there. And then we see Targo. And we also, at this point, get to see the relationship between Targo and Simon. Because Simon is somewhat doing this all for fun, you know, as we know. And Targo just turns to him and goes, Simon, kill him. Stop toying with him. Kill him. No, but that sounds like Hans. Come on, that's not Hans.
Well, he's the thing about him, Targo. He's kind of like he's like the roadie, and Simon's kind of like Tony Stark, where he's kind of like trying to keep Simon on task, and Simon's like, all right, well, you know, it's like he's very, I'll say, big brother to him, but very like, you know, buzzkill.
As we've seen over the last few weeks, you know, even when Simon was talking to them about the riddle in the park, I mean, Targo is just trying. He's the time man. You know, he's the guy who's looking at his watch and says, okay, we don't have time for this. You know, and Simon's like, yeah, we got time for everything. Cops aren't around for $20. Who cares? You know.
Yeah, it's a very Tony Stark roadie relationship they have.
Yes. Yeah. And so he basically says, stop toying with him and kill him now. And at this point, Simon, you know, looks around, you know, he sees the Targo's face. He sees Katya's face. The two of them are, you know, completely emotionless about all this stuff. And then Simon finally agrees with him and he says, okay, so be it. May he rest in peace. And then he says to Rolf, I'll inform Carl in the lobby. You pack up your team and get out of there. So before we move along, let's talk about the term rest in peace.
Mm.
Okay. So do you have any idea where that comes from?
No, I'm assuming that's something from Old English or something to that effect. It sounds like something from the olden days, the Black Death days, I would say.
Okay, it's originally from the Latin phrase requiescat in pace or something like that. I don't know how to pronounce that.
Wow, sounded like Frank Herbert you just said.
Right? It could be.
Quisquiderac, is that what you just said?
So it's part of ecclesiastical Latin. And it's used in traditional Christian services and prayers, Catholic, Lutheran, and Anglican, Methodist. And it's the idea is to wish the soul of a decent person eternal rest and peace.
Of a decent person? Wow. Very specific.
Yeah.
And an undecent person, you're screwed.
That's get right. out of here. Well, you don't want them to rest in peace, do you?
No.
And it's become ubiquitous on headstones. You know, they started like around in the 18th century, starting to put there, you know, where obviously, you know, they use the abbreviation. It's just RIP.
RIP. Yeah.
RIP. With the whole thing. And, you know, there's another phrase that is similar to it, which is rest in power.
Which is that, how old is that? That can't be that old.
When do you think?
I started hearing that like in the 90s, so I don't know. Maybe it was the early, maybe it was later than that. When I see it, I was like, eh, okay. it feels very Gen Z, so I have no idea when it would come out.
Okay, well, the first time it was used was on the 13th of April, 1989. So you were very close with the 90s.
Right. I don't like it. I prefer Resident Evil. It sounds very. It makes it like death, like trendy. I'm like, no. Like the guy.
Because the whole idea here
be is traditional, please. Can you be traditional about this one thing? This one thing, please.
That's right. Because the whole idea here, obviously, is you know, it's for somebody who has been dealing with prejudice throughout their life, you know, and they're no longer alive and that type of thing. So I agree with you. It's not as powerful as. As
death should be a little bit more respectful, I would say. When I see it, I'm like, okay, I don't get angry. I'm just like, it seems like you're trying to do a meme, and I don't like it. I just don't like it.
Okay. No, I definitely agree with you on that one. It's funny, though, because, you know, knowing the connotation of it, even after Queen Elizabeth died in 2022, there were commentators who used that phrase. You know, but I have a feeling they were talking about something else.
Yeah, that's Queen Elizabeth.
Yes.
We're not going to get any political. We're not going to get political here, as you said before. But let's just say that's highly unlikely, I would assume.
Yes. Exactly. So, I mean, Simon is not happy about having made this decision, but, you know, he looks over and, you know, Targo still is looking at the road and Katya steals a look at him for a second, which, again, knowing illusions. What happens exactly, knowing what happens in this movie, it's very funny that they do it that way. You know, that we actually
this is kind of like Simon that. Like being told to come inside because it's dark, it's getting dark. He's like, okay, turn That's off right. the game. It's dinner time. It's like
That's exactly him. Sure. And then we're back on Ralph again, and he goes, and this one. And as he's, you know, as he's waiting for a response from Simon, Zeus walks up to him and goes, "Officer."
I love the little. Give me one second. I love that little. One second.
That's
one
right. He holds up his finger, saying, "All right, just one second, one moment." You know, that type of thing. Because he's and the great part about it is we know he's waiting to find out if he needs to kill this guy or not.
Murder this man, exactly. Yeah.
That's right. It's not a question of, okay, you know, this is someone who we're just gonna, you know, this is a life or death situation that, and right. Zeus isn't aware of that.
Right.
You know, he thinks that he's just talking to a regular cop, you know, that type of thing. And then Ralph says again, he goes, "Yeah, I'm afraid I'm gonna need an answer on that issue." You know, and he puts like his finger on his, you know, on his lip at the time also.
Yeah, you know, switches to American accent when That's he says it too, because he was doing German before, and then he goes right. I'm gonna need an answer on this issue.
That's right.
Straight American, Battle of the Bulge.
Exactly. And then we get a response from Simon, and Simon goes, "Let him go." You know, and again, we get to see the reactions of Katya and Targo on this whole thing. Targo is still looking straight ahead. Completely emotionless, and she has given him a little bit of a look.
Yeah, you know, in a bottle. Again, I've watched this movie maybe 7 million times, so you don't really take in when you're watching it as a whole. That's great about the show. When you watch it as a whole, a lot of these moments kind of fly over your head a little bit. But when you see it in a bottle, you kind of know. I thought about something I had never thought of. Until I watched this one scene, who has more of a heart, Simon Gruber or Hans Gruber? And my answer is Simon Gruber, because Hans, his plan was to blow up a roof full of people to escape. So how many innocent people does Simon kill in this movie? Innocent as in not attacking him, just random normal people, who at Zeus would be. And I'm not, I was thinking, I was like, I think he doesn't kill. He makes a point later. I'm not a monster. I wouldn't, you know. So I think he has more of, not saying he won't kill, just in terms of innocence, how many would he kill? Because Hans kills, right off the bat, he kills Takagi, who you could say he's innocent. He's pretty much an innocent man, though he kind of was antagonizing him. I'm checking. I'm Hans Gruber's lawyer.
But he also knew that was the plan. He knew he was going to be
that
killing
was the
him.
Plan. Exactly. You're right. But his plan at the end was to kill all the hostages on the roof. He does wound the cops. That's about the most mercy he shows, was it just wound them, is essentially it. But then he kills the cops with a rocket launcher. And his plan, again, I want to underline, his plan was to get everybody on the roof, blow the roof, and then escape on the rubble. We'll be earning 50%, as they whatever, that stuff. So he was going to kill more innocent people. Simon is head faking all of New York about murder. So I, in this moment where he's like, let him go. Why? It's because I think he does. He's trying not to. And we'll get into his next episode because there's not something else that happens. I think him and his men aren't. They're more professional about this heist. What separates him from his brother? He is more professional in planned and rigorous than his brother, I would say, in terms of how to operate the plan. Hans seems like he had one great plan, and he's very improvising. Simon seemed like he knew, to me, his plan's better to me. So I think, and when you want to stick on a plan, you don't want to just go randomly murdering a bunch of people. You want to kill the people you need to kill and get out. And right. I think this moment where he lets Zeus live, it's like that. Never thought about who is more vicious until I watched this 1 minute. And I was like, why would he let him go at this moment? How many people does Simon kill who are just random, regular people? Not many.
That's right. And even though he's been toying with Zeus the whole time also, and he's like, okay, right. He's just going to let him go. I mean, we mentioned this a little bit last week, you know, when they get the tickets to go to Yankee Stadium. So how did Simon know that there was going to be two? Like, why would he, you know, if he was originally...
That wasn't the plan.
The plan was just to play game with John, not with anyone else.
Yeah, John is not innocent in this game because John killed his brother. So that's this vengeance. So
that's right.
Die hard with a vengeance. So, yeah. And later on, spoiler alert, he kind of says... I didn't even know that, which is essentially him saying, and he says to a retort, I didn't ask you on this boat. You brought yourself here.
That's
so
right.
Simon is not looking to kill Zeus. Zeus happens to be there. So if Zeus were never to come, Simon would have no issue with him. And in terms, again, spoiler alert again, there is no plan to blow up any children. So
no.
But I don't think
Hans would have done that either.
Well, again, you're probably right. But
what would have happened if there were kids at the Christmas party?
If McClane's not at the Christmas party, everyone at the Christmas party is dead. That's Hans's plan. Hans's plan is get them to the roof, blow the roof. They're sifting through the rubble. We're already gone. He needs them to all those innocent people to die so they can sneak away. So he was going to kill a whole bunch of innocent people. Those explosions in the beginning of Die Hard with a Vengeance remind me, did it kill anybody? I can remember the cops in the movie,
we don't know if they killed anybody in the original bombing of the department store. In the script, they have a scene similar to the Untouchables. You know, where someone picks up a briefcase and says, oh, you forgot this briefcase.
Oh, yeah. So, because I remember Joe saying something, we got something, a whole bunch of
That's the bomb on the train.
That's the bomb on the train. Right. Which, so was he going to kill all those people on the train? Maybe that's what I'm forgetting. Oh, okay. I take it back then. Oh, I forgot
so
about
he killed,
the train.
He definitely killed people in Bonnet Teller. And he was planning on killing people on the train. I mean, I still have a lot of trouble believing that nobody was killed on the train with that explosion.
Yeah, that should have killed so many people.
That's right.
I forgot about the train sequence because that's the whole point. It's like there was no chance of them to get there in time. They literally like broke every law and barely got there in time. And so yeah, I guess he was going to kill everybody on the train. So why does he let Simon? Why does he let Zeus go? I was thinking of it like he doesn't want to kill any people, but I forgot about the train part, though that is part of the plan. It's weird. It's weird. It's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have an answer for you on that one.
Does he like? Maybe he likes Zeus. Maybe he doesn't like Zeus.
Maybe.
I'm trying to, because he doesn't really, because Zeus insults him on the phone. But so does, yeah, because I'm trying
to. Well, no, because really he says to him, because he makes fun of him and calls him.
Stick your well laid plan up your well laid ass is what he says to him, and then he hangs up the phone.
That's right.
Which is a very, very good line. But if you were to ask the script, right, why does he let Zeus go? What would be the answer? Because I was just grasping that maybe he just doesn't want to kill innocent people. But again, even though he kind of doesn't really, his plan was to kill the people on the train, which I forgot. So I don't know. I don't know why that happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. But what it comes down to is that you know, it's all just to move the plot forward. That's all it is.
Right, right. We can't have Zeus die here.
No. You got to keep him alive for a little bit longer. Even though at this point Simon thinks that John's about to die also.
Right. Well, remember, John does not count as an innocent. John, he is trying to enact vengeance upon John, so I don't count him. But it's just this throws a little wrench into it. Like, why just kill them both? What the hell do you care? But I guess, it's one of those odd things. Like, why would you let him go? Because any argument you say to make him alive goes, the train throws a monkey wrench in that, where you're like, well, you're going to kill everybody on the train. What does this other guy mean? He's more detrimental than the people on the train are. Kill this guy. He's helping John McClane out. So, yeah, it's weird. It's weird.
Mm-hmm. And one of the crazy things also is that by, you know, with what about all the security guards? You know,
are security, they... See, that's why I kind of underline it, where people who are attacking them or stopping them from, like you have, there's no way you're not killing the security guard. If they rob the bank, you have to kill the security guard. So I don't really count them. I'm talking about like random, like Zeus is not a cop. He's just a electrician. He's just a dude. So like you're killing him, he's literally an innocent person. Everybody on the train also, though, was innocent person. The guards, to me, they are, this is, sounds very callous, but they're kind of collateral damage, because to get what I want, I have to kill these people. I have to kill these security guards to get to the gold or whatnot. So again, he doesn't like overkill. He tried to stop your girl because she was killing the crap out of that guy earlier. It's like, he's dead. You can stop. What are you doing? It's over.
Right.
So he's very, I say conservative, but just, you know, the job done. We don't need to, take it to an extreme to murder everybody like viciously and stuff like that. But just to kill the moment, because he thinks about it. He sits there on the phone for like half a beat. And he goes, let him go. And it's like, why? Why? Just kill him. If you kill him right now, then again, and you're right, it's probably just move the plot forward. But that would be one question I would have. I would ask. You probably wouldn't ever get an answer, but it's an interesting little beat there.
Right.
Could just like him. But Samuel Jackson, I like that guy. He insulted me. I like the insult. It was a funny insult. I like that. I let this guy live just because he said well laid plan of my well laid. That was funny. I let it. I was good.
Yeah. I agree with you. It's a nice way to do it. And again, you know, you getting Kevin Bacon's brother-in-law to give us these lines is just great.
Right.
And at this point, basically, you know, one of the things that I noticed, that there's another cop or another fake cop in the background. And yeah, in the first dude. Half of the minute, right, this is Ivan. Okay, we've seen him already before. But, you know, in the first half of the minute, he's not wearing his hat. And then he puts his hat on in the middle in the background, you know, I guess to make him look a little more official or something like that with what he's doing.
Put the rest of your costume on.
That's the one. You forgot your hat. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. And then he says, understood. And then he looks over at Zeus and goes, yes, sir. You're like, how can I help you? And he goes, John McClane says to give you this.
I love this little moment coming up.
Well, first of all, does Zeus expect that every cop in New York knows who John McClane is?
John McClane is. I would assume John McClane is pretty famous, I guess, because of the incident. It would probably be known that when John was staying in the middle of Harlem or whatnot, and the fact that he's pretty if John McClane was the real cop, he'd be the most famous cop in the history. The fact that he survived the Nakatomi incident and the Dulles Airport incident, he'd be the most famous cop in the world.
So yes, sure.
I let it go for that point. If Die Hard 2, Die Hard 1 clearly exists, but if Die Hard 2 also exists, he would be the most famous cop in the history of the world. So yeah, for sure. I let it go.
I agree with you.
You stopped two terrorists today? You killed essentially Castro? Yeah, yeah. You're the most famous cop in the world. You're
good. Exactly. And then another one of the fake cops takes the bomb and starts like playing around with it and stuff like that. Now, this actor is even more surprising than the first guy. Okay, so okay. His name is Tony Halme, Halme. He was born in 1963 and he passed away in 2010. Okay, he has only 20 IMDb credits. He is originally from Helsinki, Finland, and this guy was a professional wrestler, boxer, a whole bunch of different things. He unfortunately committed suicide at the age of 47.
Oh, wow.
His nicknames were Ludwig Borga, Vikinki, and the Viking.
Vikinki's a funny one.
Yeah. He wrestled in the WWF in the early 90s as Ludwig Borga.
Okay.
He's a former Finnish boxing heavyweight champion. He recorded two albums of songs, including one of them that went platinum.
Renaissance man.
Oh, completely. Just wait. Okay. They had the TV show The Gladiators in Finland, and he was the character of the Viking, the Vikinki. All right. And he was elected to the Finnish parliament in 2003. So if you're talking about a Renaissance man,
jeez, I've done it all. Literally, I've done it all.
Seriously. And I've played a fake policeman, you know, in...
I played a German terrorist / bank robber in a Die Hard trilogy movie.
That's right. And so he's like playing around with the briefcase and looks about to open it. And then Zeus goes, wait. Jesus.
Samuel Jackson's delivery is so funny.
I love this part.
Geez, don't open it. It's a bomb. So, don't open it. What the hell are you doing?
And then Rolf says, another? And he goes, yeah. He goes, oh, I see. Which it's a very funny way for him to look at it from that perspective. And that's pretty much how this minute ends. But it's a very strange conversation at the end. You know, the way, yeah. I mean, I understand the conversation, but I just don't think it's delivered well enough. You know, maybe it's just for the comic aspect of it, them saying, oh, another bomb.
I think they might have ad-libbed that. That is probably like some let's do a little bit here. Where they open, because it doesn't seem like you have the script, so which I was already differing from in the last episode, so I don't know, maybe they made this up on the day kind of thing.
Yeah. Maybe. All right, so that's all I have for this minute. Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
Revelation, that's Kira Sedgwick's brother. That's freaking crazy, man. I would have never guessed that. That's awesome.
The script doesn't have very much related to this scene here, but what it does have, so Zeus pedals up to the subway station, stopping behind the barricade. Zeus says, hey, the two cops turn, seeing Zeus. They walk over to him. Yes, sir. I was told to come and get you guys. The two fake cops look at each other. I'm sorry, sir. A cop wants you to meet him in the lobby of the building down there. Points to the Federal Reserve. Don't ask me. The two cops look at each other again. The tension is mounting. We can't do that, sir. And strangely, they move outside the barricades and walk off down the street. So, again, wow. I like what they did here in the movie much better. No question about that.
Again, you cannot have those cops go into that Federal Reserve. You're killing John the moment those cops show up. You have to get them away from there. So, and this seems more, the script seems more clumsy than the movie where he doesn't even ask them to go.
Completely. Exactly. All right. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Trilogy Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five movie trilogies. So what have you got for us, DJ? I know that there are certain movies like this one to you are trilogies. So, you know, I'm very flexible about that.
I did joke about that, but when I made this list, I go, I'm going to actually pick trilogies that are actually in a bubble. So, like, you're not going to get any Indiana Jones from me. You're not going to get any Star Wars. You're not going to get any Lord of the Rings because there's before and afters. So I was trying to pick ones that don't have a before and after. They're in a bubble, all right?
Okay.
Strictly in a bubble. There's no, you know, so I'll start from number five and work my way up. We joked about this before, so... I'm going number five, Naked Gun trilogy, because it hasn't been released yet. They're trying to remake this, which I think is a horrible, horrible idea.
Oh my god! But that really is. Who do they want to?
Such a.
Who do they want to play?
Are you ready? Are you ready for me to tell you who they want to play the Liam Neeson character? Liam Neeson. Sorry, Leslie Nielsen is playing the Liam Neeson character. I spoiled it. Leslie Nielsen is being going to be played by the Liam Neeson. I think Seth MacFarlane might have something to do with it. That might be the reason.
I don't think that Liam Neeson could do Leslie Nielsen as well.
I get what they're trying to do because Leslie Nielsen was a serious actor, and he does comedy so well. And to Liam Neeson's credit, he was very funny in the Ted movies. So I get it, but this is one you should never do not touch. Naked Gun.
No.
Police Story. The TV show was fantastic. Naked Gun, there's like 1,000. For each movie, there's 1,000 jokes you can't do today. You just can't touch any. The Anna Nicole Smith plot line alone in the third. You can't even broach that subject. So, yes, but Naked Gun is one of the funniest freaking trilogies of all time. It's my number five. My number four. Is The Surprise. This is the dark horse. This is the maybe you should rewatch it. And again, going to each one of these movies, I was like, this is probably gonna be bad. And I watched, I was like, you know what? That was not bad.
Wait a second, what movie?
Equal.
What's the series?
I haven't said it yet.
Oh, okay.
I haven't said it yet.
I thought you were calling it the Dark Horse. I don't like what the Dark Horse is. Okay.
No, not the Dark Horse. Dark Horse is, and you would never see it coming, but for some reason DJ Valentine does not see this as a bad trilogy. I'm going with the Equalizer trilogy, the Denzel Washington Equalizer trilogy. Part one, very, very good. Part two, pretty good. Part three, surprisingly good. Part three, if you ever watch the Equalizer 3, watch it and understand that it is, what if Jason Voorhees was retired in Italy or something? That is essentially what Equalizer 3 is, because near the end of the movie, spoiler alert, kind of, not really, when he does his Equalizer stuff, he does it in a way where he's killing people the way Jason would. He's like showing, and I'm not joking, he's like showing up out of nowhere and killing people in a manner where you're like, oh man, that was very brutal. Where'd you come from? Again, watch the third movie and just have it in the back of your mind. Imagine if he was wearing a hockey mask, and it would still make sense because he's doing it in a manner that is terrifyingly killing people. So yes, Equalizer 3, very good movie. Denzel Washington, fantastic. Number three, even though I love the second movie, I like really much the first movie, and I really don't like the third movie. But in a bubble, there's parts I do like in the third movie. I'm putting The Dark at number three. I love The Dark Knight. I'm okay with Batman Begins. I love Ra's al Ghul and Christian Bale as Batman. There's some issues with the action that I don't like. And the third movie is flawed to all get out. But there's parts I do like. I love Anne Hathaway, who you killed last episode. I love
she's Tom Hardy's portrayal. She's alive.
She's alive. I love Tom Hardy's portrayal of Bane. I love certain parts of the movie, but script-wise, it's got holes. But in terms of a trilogy in a bubble, it's really, really good. Number two, this is probably going to get me in trouble with my co-host, Justin Palizzi, is the Back to the Future trilogy in a bubble. Never, ever, ever, ever make any more of these. Keep it in a bubble forever. I know Robert Zemeckis said they will never touch this movie as long as I'm alive, which I made a spoof that they're going to try and kill him because they're somebody's going to come out. We spoofed that somebody's going to try and put a hit out on Robert Zemeckis because you know they're chomping at the bit to remake this with Tom Holland and some Robert Downey Jr. as Doc. Some crazy crap will happen. But right Back to the Future, though it's not my – it's one of those things where you know not your favorite basketball player, but you respect them. Back to the Future is not one of my favorite films, but I respect it. It's one of the best time travel movies ever. Michael J. Fox, it's built his freaking career. It's a fantastic film. Not like, you know, I watch it morning, noon, and night, but I got to respect what it is. It's a fantastic trilogy. And number one, I mean, this is mine. It's a pseudo trilogy. When I say pseudo, it's connected, but it's not really connected, but it is connected. It's the Dollars trilogy. That's the Fistful of Dollars, a few dollars more, and The Good, the Bad, the Ugly. That's my favorite trilogy of all time. The Good, the Bad, the Ugly is essentially a prequel because that's where he gets the poncho that you see him wearing in Fistful of Dollars and a few dollars more with Clint Eastwood. Lee Van Cleef kind of plays two characters. He plays a different character in a few dollars more as he plays in The Good, the Bad, the Ugly. He plays Angel Eyes in The Good, the Bad, the Ugly. He plays a good guy in a few dollars more. But yes, this trilogy, and my stepfather made me watch Westerns when I was very, very young. And this was the ones, these three movies were, I think I've seen Good, the Bad, the Ugly. I'm not even joking, 50 times. I've seen that movie so many times.
When will you be doing that minute by minute?
If you call me for Good, the Bad, the Ugly, I'm there. I love Good, the Bad.
No, meaning when are you going to host it? That's what I'm
saying. Oh, gee, you don't want me host because the show would be 17 hours long. I can spend 2 hours on 1 minute of that movie. So yes, I love anything having to do with Blondie, Angel Eyes. The Good, the Bad, the Ugly is fantastic. Fistful of Dollars, which is a remake of Yo Jumbo, I believe. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Few Dollars More is kind of underrated. A lot of people they go to the first one, they go to Good, Bad, Ugly. People sleep on the second one. So, but yes, fantastic trilogy. If you're into Westerns, if you're not into Westerns, I get it. But if you are into Westerns, you're not going to get better than Sergio Leone and Ennio Morricone, Clint Eastwood, Eli Wallach, Lee Van Cleef. You're going to get the best of the freaking best in the Dollar Trilogy. So go ahead and do that.
Great. So, DJ, why don't you tell people where they can find DJ Valentine?
You can find DJ Valentine on Twitter mostly on Twitter because I'm a recluse. I'm trying to be DJV on Twitter or X. Sorry, did I say Twitter? It's called X. I'm sorry, Elon Musk. Don't sue me. I have no money. You can also find my podcast, the Simplistic Reviews podcast. You can just search simplistic.reviews or just search Simplistic Reviews on anything, Spotify, iTunes, YouTube. We're everywhere. So, yeah, check that out.
All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter or X, as DJ called it.
don't get sued.
Nah, I still refuse to call it X. I don't know why. You can also find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Tony comes marching home again. Hoorah, hoorah. We'll give him a hearty welcome then. Hoorah, hoorah. The men will cheer, the boys will shout. The ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.